For a short meditation this morning, I would like to you to turn your Bibles to 2 Corinthians, and we will look at a few verses from chapter 12. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Now, some of you may be aware of the fact that Paul wrote 2 Corinthians in order to defend himself. He had actually been instrumental in establishing the church in the city of Corinth, and he had actually invested so much of his time and efforts for the believers in the Corinthian church. But despite all that, there was a time when some of the Judaistic preachers, they turned against Paul. They also instigated the believers to turn against the apostle, and the relationship between Paul and the Corinthian church was actually very rough at a particular time, and Paul had to deal with that. So when we start reading 2 Corinthians, right from the first chapter, Paul is actually trying to talk about his calling. He's trying to talk about how he invested in life, his life for the sake of the Corinthian church, so on and so forth. It's more of a defense tone, okay? And one of the ways by which those Judaistic preachers were attacking Paul and his apostleship was by pointing out to Paul's vulnerability. They were attacking Paul's weaknesses. Now in chapter 12, Paul is actually turning the tables back onto them. Whatever they pointed as Paul's weakness, Paul now begins to say, yes, they are my weaknesses. Yes, I do understand the difficulties that I have, but I am not ashamed of that. Rather, I'm going to boast about my weaknesses. So we'll read a few verses. This is 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And we will read verses from 7 to 10. 7 through 10. So to keep me from becoming conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, I am strong. I'm sure we all know this particular phrase, which has now become part of the English language, thorn in the flesh. More like an idiomatic expression. Okay? I heard husbands say, she's a thorn in my flesh, about the wife, and vice versa also. Now, when Paul was writing about this thorn in the flesh, now, what was he trying to explain? Now, there is no consensus among Bible commentators or Bible scholars as to the real meaning of what Paul meant. Okay? There are people who say that it could be an eye problem that Paul had dealt with for long, or it could be about some malarial fevers that he constantly had, or there are people who say it was a besetting sinful temptation. Or there are people who say, no, he had problems with speech. And then there are people who say, this is one of the earliest interpretation of this. He had migraines. You read that in some of the church fathers. And then so on and so forth. So, it is safe to say this was a general metaphor to refer to something that bothered him in the flesh. When I use the word flesh, doesn't have to be just the physical body, because in the New Testament language, flesh also meant mind. So this could be an issue that Paul dealt either in his flesh or both in his physical body and also in mind. Okay? Now, but the kind of language that Paul uses here, one thing is very clear. It was something that was tormenting him. Something that was harassing him. Something that was buffeting him. And the verb, if you look at here, it indicates a kind of a recurring chronic problem that Paul had to deal with. Now, what are we to conclude? I'm just trying to explain that one phrase, thorn in the flesh. So what are we to conclude here? Now, we all know by whatever we read about Apostle Paul in the Bible, he's not the kind of person, no, who would really make a big thing out of a trivial issue. He's not somebody, no, who will cringe over, no, something that is more like a passing pain. One thing that is very clear is this: if Paul had to talk about this very specifically, this was so debilitating. For Paul, no, this was very frustrating. For Paul, no, this was perhaps a ministry spoiler. I would say, no, his vulnerability. People could not talk about this. His own, no, co-workers or other ministers, no, whenever they wanted to put down Paul, they could actually, no, pinpoint to this issue in Paul's life. Something, no, that really bothered him for many, many years. And now when Paul is writing about this to the Corinthian church, no, he takes the courage to openly talk about it. That's amazing. To openly talk about one's own vulnerability or weakness, or what others are actually, no, using as a weapon against you, you need a lot of courage. So now Paul is actually taking up that issue. And then, no, he's openly writing to the Corinthian church about his burdensome affliction. Now, there are a few lessons that we can learn as we meditate upon this particular passage here. The first thing that we see here is Paul prayed about it. That's a good thing. Paul prayed about this issue. Now, if you look at Paul's life, there are several other instances where Paul says, I prayed to the Lord and the Lord delivered me. If you look at the last letter that Paul wrote to Timothy, now he's actually making a lot of statements, which is almost like summary of his entire life. He says, no, the Lord delivered me several times. And he also, no, has that confidence, the same Lord will deliver me. And then in few other epistles, Paul is saying, no, I want you to pray that this will result in my deliverance. So therefore, Paul is someone, no, who believed in prayer. Paul is someone, no, who believed that God could bring about deliverance in any kind of a situation. So therefore, Paul is now, when he was facing this thorn in the flesh, this issue, whatever that was, no, he was so burdened to pray about it. In fact, no. Now, there is a very interesting thing about Paul's prayer here in verse 8. Three times I pleaded with the Lord. Okay? The one thing that I want you to observe is he pleaded with the Lord. He was very sincere. Now, today we live in a context where, no, people say If you sincerely plead with the Lord, if you have enough faith, no, surely your prayers will be answered. Yes? Especially within the charismatic circles, you have the whole concept of you pray and make claims. And then, no, if you don't receive, then they say, no, you have not pleaded enough with the Lord. You don't have enough faith to really achieve what you want to achieve. But here, Paul is clearly saying, I pleaded with the Lord. I was sincere. Now, when I went to the Lord with this matter, I really wanted God to what? Give me an answer. And then the next thing that we observe here is, why on earth, no, you stop praying after 3 times? If this was something, no, that was so bothering in your life, then why did he stop after what? 3 times. No? Interestingly, now, is it something very symbolic? This mentioning of 3 times, is it symbolic or can we take it literally? He prayed number 1, number 2, number 3. On this particular date, then the next date, and the third date. And after that, Paul what? Ceased to pray about it. And I want to take this literally. Perhaps Paul prayed for this literally 3 times and then he stopped praying about it. Okay? Now that's very surprising. Why did he stop praying about it? The reason is also given in the same passage. Paul stopped praying about this matter to the Lord because he had a definite answer given to him by the Lord. He didn't get deliverance that we know. He did not receive deliverance, but he got a definite answer for the pleading. If you look at the Greek construction of this verse here, in verse 9, okay, look at that verse 9, it starts with but. It starts with but, meaning I was praying to the Lord and I prayed 3 times, but he said to me, meaning I was praying for deliverance, but, meaning I did not receive deliverance, but I received a definite answer. What is he saying? Verse 9, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Brothers and sisters, for Paul, this was more than enough. For Paul, this was more than enough. Why? God knows my situation. And I know God understands my difficulty. And God also is now promising me that his grace is sufficient. And I want to add a little more of information from the background. If you read through the chapter 12 from the beginning, Paul is actually talking about, you know, a very special revelation he had. That was 14 years ago. Okay? 14 years ago, Paul had a supernatural revelation. Okay, I don't want to explain more on those aspects, but it was very, very special. For 14 years, he did not openly talk about that experience to anyone. Now he is connecting that experience when he wants to talk about his weakness. Perhaps, you know, my way of looking at this is, for Paul, this was an issue that, you know, was troubling him for, I would say, like more than 10 years or all those 14 years. Something, no, that has been like, no, been there for many, many years. And now, Paul is also trying to know, see, what has really helped me thus far. It is not that, no, when Paul is praying now, God is saying, I am going to give you grace from now on. That is not the way Paul understood this verse. Rather, he would have looked back. He would have looked back to all those years of that difficulty and pain. And then he would have applied what Jesus said, what Christ said to him. And what is that? My grace is what? Is sufficient for you. It is not applying for the future. From now on, my grace will be sufficient for you. I don't think that's how Paul understood it. He would have looked back to all those years. I'm just saying, you know, 14 years or more. And Paul was able to see the hand of God. Yes, God's grace has been what? Sufficient for me. Brothers and sisters, I'm sure that we know that the way God works in our lives is so different. If you ask Paul, how many of your prayers have been answered in the way you liked it, you wanted? Paul would say, yes, there are many, many prayers. There are many, many deliverances that I have received from the Lord. Okay? But has every time the answers from the Lord has been the way you wanted? Paul's answer would be what? No, but I definitely got an answer. Even though it did not work out in the way that I desired or I even prayed, but I know that God has definitely answered me. The Lord has sustained me. The Lord has sustained me. And for Paul, that's more than enough. I'm sure that many of us, we know, like, people who have gone through suffering, pain for years together. A few years ago, I was in a place called Arnakatti. That's close to Kerala-Tamil Nadu border, where you have Dr. Muralidhar, who has a tribal mission hospital. And then we were having a camp there. So when we are having some conversation with the local people who are working there, and one of them said, we have a patient who is here, who's been here for almost close to 13 years. Okay? And then, it's like, I mean, the only hope or the only deliverance that person is looking forward is to a time where that person will be called into eternity. Okay? We went there and saw that person. He cannot turn this way or that way without the help of another person. Terrible pain. Terrible pain. But as we sat there and talked to that person, for him what we realized was, yes, if you ask, is that pain you are experiencing now? His answer is yes. Are you feeling no, even after 12 or 13 years of no bedridden stage, are you still feeling that difficulty in spite of getting used to? Answer is yes. But you know what has given him hope is, the Lord has helped me through the last 13 years. Now I've experienced God's grace in the last 13 years. And that gives him hope towards the future. And I believe Paul also was now taking life from that perspective. Now there are a few things that I want to just highlight. I don't have much time, but I just want to highlight a few things. And then we'll wind up. Look out for this verse here. This is in verse 7. We are in chapter 12, verse 7. Okay? Right from the middle of that verse. A thorn was given me in the flesh. A messenger of Satan to harass me. Now, very interesting. Actually, if you look at these two phrases, very interesting. On one side, Paul is saying, what is he saying? He's saying, a thorn was given me in the flesh. And then on the very next thing he says, that is a weapon in the hands of the devil. I don't know how many of you are able to get this. No? Paul is talking about two entities, two forces working in his life. One, he says, this problem in my life is actually, you know, something the devil uses as a weapon against me, to harass me, to torment me, day in, day out. On the other side, Paul is also acknowledging, this has been given to me in the flesh. Now here is my question. To whom is Paul referring to? Who gave this thorn in Paul's flesh? Brothers and sisters, it's a way of acknowledging, this is given to me by my God. This is given to me, whatever that I'm undergoing. No, whatever now the devil has used as a weapon to torment, I agree that this has been given to me, or this the Lord has allowed me to undergo. I need to accept that as a fact. Because now we live in a world where we are hating suffering, right? We hate suffering. Or we don't want suffering. We don't want anything to do with what? Trouble in life, right? When we live in such a world, it is difficult to acknowledge that God allows His children to undergo pain and sufferings. It is difficult to say, yes, Lord, you have allowed this to happen to me. Our natural tendency is to rebel against this, to ask questions, why, Lord? Why did you allow this to happen? Now, here is a quote that I want to read for you. It's actually a beautiful one. Now, it says, "Oh, if you knew what power there is in an accepted sorrow." There is power when you begin to accept the sorrow that the Lord has allowed you to carry. Now, I think there are Malayalis here, and there is a beautiful hymn that some of us we sing. Dukkathinte paanavathram kartavende kayil thannal. I mean, you need a lot of boldness to say that, yeah? Huh? Dukkathinte paanavathram kartavende kayil thannal. The songwriter is not saying the devil has given this to me. Rather, the songwriter is able to acknowledge this is something the Lord has allowed me to carry through. And if you look at the background, the context in which that psalm was written, when that priest lost his 9-year-old kid, when that priest who wrote that song, when he lost his 9-year-old child, that is when he wrote this psalm. Dukkathinte paanapathram kartavinte kayil thannal. You know why I'm saying? The more we rebel, the more we try to shy away, the more we try to find it difficult to accept, we are actually not easing out our sorrow, rather we are actually rebelling against it. And for Paul, this is given to me. This is something given in the flesh. I accept it as something the Lord has allowed me to carry. Now, I don't know whether I've told you this. I think I've come here a few times before. So I don't know whether I've told you this. This is John Piper. When he was diagnosed with prostate cancer a few years ago, and just before when he went for surgery, he took time out to write a small book. Don't waste your cancer. Don't waste your cancer. It's a very small book. So I read it when I went through a difficult time. And one of the things that John Piper says is, you need to understand that this is God designed for you. God has designed this for your life. And then he goes on to talk about God's sovereignty. And then he explains, what is cancer? Then he says, when your first cell begins to what? Act like a rogue cell, right? That's the beginning of what? All cancers. Now then, John Piper is asking, could God have stopped that? Could God have stopped that mutation or whatever you call? Could he have stopped that rogue cell from multiplying? What is our answer? Yes. If God didn't do that, God has designed it for you. It's a powerful thing. Brothers and sisters, for Paul, he was able to accept it. And one more thing, when you read about this, Paul is also realizing it is not without a purpose. I tell you, this is such a healing thing. You know what? We know, when we realize that every pain, every suffering that we undergo, there is a purpose behind all that. None of our sufferings or pain is without what? Without a benefit. That gives us no power to undergo. Whatever the Lord has allowed us to carry through, that thought gives us the power to, really endure it, because you know that behind all this, there is a purpose. Now, did Paul understand that purpose? Paul is talking about it. You know what? I don't think that one day God appeared to Paul and said, "Fellow, you know why you're suffering? You remember all that higher revelations that I gave you? Huh? So that you don't become really proud about all that? No, I have given you this what? Thorn in the flesh." I don't think God directly told him all this stuff. Over a period of time, Paul, as he spent time in the Lord's presence, looking at his own life, trying to find meaning for this pain. You know what? That's a beautiful thing. When you sit in the Lord's presence and try to find out the meaning and purpose of the pain and sorrow, whatever we go through, the Spirit of God can actually enlighten us. And for Paul, that enlightenment was, "For me, Lord, if this thorn in the flesh is making me humble, I praise you for that. It's worth carrying. It's worth carrying." Now, there's a beautiful quote that I happened to read. "There is something worse than sickness, and that is sin. And the worst sin of all is pride." There is something worse than sickness, and that is sin. And the worst sin of all is pride. The way Paul looks at this is, if this thorn in the flesh is really what that makes me humble and keeps me to the ground, if that is what really making me holy and all that, I would better carry what? This thorn in the flesh to the rest of my life. That's Paul's way of looking at it. It is a blessing. Now, a few years ago, like maybe 5-6 years ago, every now and then, there are some songs that become very viral and popular, right? Some 6 years ago, one of those songs that became viral was written by a CSI priest, Nachan. His name is Sajan Nachan. Okay? And the song that he wrote is, "Oru Malayum Thoraathirunnittilla, Oru Kaattum Adangaathirunnittilla, Oru Raavum Pularaathirunnittilla, Oru Novum Kurayaathirunnittilla." The meaning is, like every rain, there is an end to it. It stops one day. Every wind, however horrible it is, it will stop one day. Every night will actually give rise to another day. And every pain has an end. And in that beautiful song, he writes this. This is beautiful. I don't know how I'll explain that in Malayalam. "Manyum marayum pullunna veilum ellam nadande sammanamaan en jeevithathil nannai varanai en perku daadan orukkunnathaan." You know what? Manyum, what is manyum in Malayalam? English? The mist, the fog and all that. Rain, scorching sun, All these are experiences that the Lord gives me so that, you know, to refine me. Okay? To make me, you know, so holy and separated. This is something that Dadan Urikunda. I really like that word. No, it is something prepared by the Lord for me. You know what? I mean, for a songwriter to write such things, you know, that's fine. But it comes from his experience. 33 radiations on his nose. He says, there was a time, you know, where everything around this area was like, he couldn't touch his face. You know, even the slightest, you know, like exposure to wind or sun, he was like experiencing so much of burn. And it was during that time, he realized, even this is not without a purpose. Brothers and sisters, let me say this. If you have not understood or if you have not caught hold on to this truth, I tell you, like suffering and pain, nothing else can actually know shape us to the image of His Son, Jesus Christ. Nothing else. You read theological books, you sing songs of worship and praise and all that. Okay, it's only all momentary. You'll have that high feeling for some time, but nothing like pain and sorrow that shapes you. And for Paul, if this is happening, which is happening? Yeah. What is greatest desire of God with regard to each one of us? So that we'll be conformed to the image of His Son. If that is happening because of the thorn in my flesh, I better what? Have it. And then lastly, for Paul, the reason why he was able to know, take it in this positive sense is because of what he says. Okay, for my power is made perfect in weakness. It's like no bargain. Do you want your power or my power? There's a kind of an exchange. And the exchange comes, you know, only when we experience weakness, you can experience God's power. And look at the last verse 10. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Now, I don't know, like, what is your image about Apostle Paul? But I see, after reading through many of his epistles, and then you closely observe, I feel like he was a very kind of a timid, fearful. No, First Corinthians, he says, no, when I visited you, I was in weakness, trembling, and I was fearful. Who is saying that? Apostle Paul. And then if, in spite of all that, for Paul, no, he's saying, hey, when I'm undergoing this weakness and trembling and fear, that is when I can experience what? God's power working in and through me. And that gives Paul the boasting. Look at verse 9, the second part. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. It's very true, brothers and sisters. It's very true. Now, we all have an outward appearance and we all have what? Inward thing. An outward appearance is very visible. But the inward thing, only we know. Yes or no? Only we know that. Now, I'll just give you a kind of an analogy so that you understand it. Now, if you have somebody, okay, like Johnny Erickson Tada, who has been on wheelchair for more than 50 years, outwardly looking at her, I tell you, in any crowd, she'll be the weakest person. She'll be what? The weakest vulnerable person in any crowd. But I can also say, by what is revealed through her writings and speeches and all that, inwardly she is robust. The kind of things that she writes, I tell you, unbelievable. And that, I believe, has come through experiencing God's power day after day through her weaknesses. So I pray that this becomes our experience too. Now if I sit with you, or you sit with me, or you sit with one another, and we really open our hearts, we all have what? Like Paul, thorn in the flesh. Whatever that could be. But here is an encouragement from this great man of God, that in spite of all that, God's grace is sufficient, and His power is sufficient to carry us through. May these words bless us and enable us to live for Him in the days to come. May His name be glorified.